Welcome back to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm Jeff Holman, host of this podcast, and really lucky to be interviewing and talking with so many interesting people who've done so many cool and interesting things. I've got Jerry Brazy here on the show with me today, and we've just chatted briefly. There are a few things that sounded like we have some things in common here. He comes from a little bit larger family, has three kids. I'm a little bit larger family and four kids, and then there's some stuff that stuck out that I'm not sure I know how to relate to it. I think I know what the phrase heroin and hookers means, but I'm not sure that I can add much to that story. But this is the story of Jerry and what he's done and where he's been and the millions he's made and maybe lost. And so, Jerry, it's really good to have you on the show today.
Yeah, that is a great way to kick it off, Jeff. I appreciate it very much. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to dig in.
Yeah, me too. You've done a lot of stuff. You mentioned, we don't have to go too far back, but you mentioned you've been paying taxes since you were 11. So you've been a busy guy. Tell me, from 11 years old, what was that first job that you did? How did you make that money?
Well, I got a job. Again, I come from abject poverty. My mother had six kids when she was 23 years old. Imagine this. She brought home an infant and she had a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 year old.
By 23.
She had six kids that were five and under. I think I did that math wrong, but you get my point. Under, six kids, largely by herself, slept every other day for a decade while she was raising them. 7 years later, I come along on accident. She didn't want me to be an only child because so many years in between. So I have a 22-month younger brother and a little sister. Abject poverty. Dad was gone. Mom's ruling the roost. I mean, you know, we stole food to eat. My brother and I had a whole program of specialty coats that we had cut the pockets out of so we could steal from Safeway. And yeah, I mean, we were just, you know, we're 8 years old and 6 years old and we're running these scams. Because that's how we ate a lot of times. Yeah. Because remember, I have older brothers and sisters. And so at 11, I got the local restaurant guy to give me a job in Portland, Oregon, washing dishes on Saturday and Sunday. So I would go in there, $2.35 an hour. And they paid me. The funny thing about paying me is I would go right around the corner to the local market, cash the check and get all ones because I wanted to have a wad to look like I knew what I was doing because that's what I saw on
at
TV.
11.
I had to make it rain at 11. That's exactly right. And so that was the impetus. But the thing was that they fed me at the end. I'll never forget it. I got a club sandwich and they fed me and I got a club sandwich and they piled all the fries in the middle of it. It was the first meal I had ever eaten in a restaurant. So I worked all day for the first meal I ever ate in a restaurant. And I would have, and I'm not lying, because I had no concept really of money when you come from being abject poverty. I would have done the work for that meal. I would have worked the 8 hours really busy restaurant washing dishes for that meal. And then at 12 years old, I left that job because IHOP paid me more. So I literally worked for an International House of Pancakes at 12 years old, Saturday and Sunday, busy as can be, in the back, sweating it out, washing dishes.
Wow.
And then just every job, I just kept moving to whatever job would pay me more money.
That's amazing. You know, I just want to point out a few parallels here. Although I can't claim they're great parallels. My mom, she wasn't single, but she had three under three. I was the third under 3 years old. And I thought that was a lot. Five without a co-parent, like
six.
Wow. And then
5 years and under, six children.
Kudos to women who can do that under whatever circumstances. That's pretty amazing. First off.
So my mother's 87 years old, still alive, still lives on, just crazy. She's as strong as can be. It's amazing. She's pissed at her body all the time because it doesn't keep up with her weight.
Well, what does this is totally outside of what I would normally ask, but I'm super curious. What would she say if I were to ask her, hey, tell me about Jerry? Like, what's the one thing she would say about you over all these years? She knows the good and the bad. She's seen you grow up. She's seen you, your successes and everything else. What would she say?
My mother gave me some, as you can imagine, when you come from something like that, you know, you start to rebel. And I did. I went 10 years without seeing any of my parents, you know, from about 17 to 27, 20 years old till I had kids. But she gave me some advice that I think she would probably say to anybody, you know, tell me about Jerry. And it was advice she gave me when I was 14 years old, 15 years old. My sister died. My next oldest sister died on her 21st birthday, believe it or not, when I was 14 years old. And she was like a mother to me, you know, because she was so close. My mother told me the way people react, she says, it's up to you. But she said, your thing is, Jerry, that you're the rock that everyone crashes against. So that's a very tough responsibility, and you need to appreciate that responsibility. And that stuck with me. I mean, as I got older, it became more profound and it made more sense. And you become an entrepreneur, and, you know, that's a singular business in and of itself. You don't get to commiserate, right? You don't get to have relationships generally, all of those sorts of things. But everything comes to you. And so she was a prophet in that everything that I am, that rock that everyone crashes against, which is really just a good way to explain what an entrepreneur is.
Yeah. An island of one many times.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. I've worked with so many CEOs. It took me a little while to figure out how lonely it was for them to operate those businesses. You know, you see them, everybody wants to be in the room. They all laugh when you make a joke, but then they go back to their office and it's, you know, not everybody's on your side, and you can't necessarily feel comfortable telling everybody the stuff you're going through, telling the employees the business isn't working like they think it is, or the investors that, you know, everything isn't all, you're not always hitting your mark. Like that's a tough spot to be in. And you've been doing that your whole life, it sounds like.
When you get out, when you actually make it too, it's all well and good when you're not doing well, right? As an entrepreneur, okay. When you're doing well, it's all the people turn against you. And when you come from where I come from, no one wants to see you get out, because if you get out, that means it's not the system that's oppressive. It means, right, they have personal responsibility. So your family doesn't want to see you do well. Your friends don't want you to see you do well. The culture doesn't want to see you do well, right? So it's not only is it lonely, but there are all these forces on you that you don't even recognize that says, you know, I don't want you to do better. I'm going to pretend like I do. And then as soon as you hit it, right, that's when all the judging starts. I mean, I have friends who will forget. I worked 18 hours a day for 4 years and didn't get paid.
Yeah.
The first 4 years of my business. And I was doing $14 million a year in revenue. I couldn't figure out how to make money.
Yeah.
And so they're thinking, oh, you're living this fat cat lifestyle. And I was like, no, I'm an island by myself, right? There's no one to help me. And when you're not making money, there are no friends. When you make money, you have friends. When you're not making money, there are no friends. So it's even worse when you are, you know, when you hit the tough times. That's when that island really starts to stand out. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about the value of community here in a bit on the show. Reminds me though, my wife and I, when we were first married, we were in a downtown Salt Lake City ward. Salt Lake City is not necessarily full of that much poverty, but we were in an area that is known, you know, for being a little less well off, had the homeless shelter and other places in it. We lived there. We attended a church on Sundays there, and we helped the youth in this that lived there. You know, we had grown up somewhere else with more means. And when we went and we're like, hey, let's talk to the youth about journaling, or let's talk to them about work ethic, or let's talk to them about college. I remember one time my wife came home and she was just kind of devastated because she ran in for the first time in her life. She ran into this kind of culture or this attitude or this kind of philosophy. She said, Jeff, I just got chewed out by these people. Like they're like, well, who do you think you are? You're telling my kids they should go to college. Why do you think they're better than me? And it was a real eye opener for us. We, of course, we didn't mean anything degrading by it. We thought, oh, you know, doesn't everybody seek these things? Maybe because it had been pounded into our minds, like you go to college, you do this, you know, there's that pathway. And so it really shook my wife a bit. And we, you know, we've tried to be a lot more sensitive to it now that we understand there's that other side. But that's the side you grew up in, you came from.
I love that story. I love that your eyes were opened that way, because you know, we watch television and you watch social media and everything looks, you know, it's all up here, and politicians are always talking about how they're going to help the poor. I've never heard any politician ever, anything they ever said, as someone who comes from that environment, did anything that ever helped me.
Yeah.
And there is, I always said, when I'm asked, Jerry, of all the things you've done, what are you most proud of? My children graduated from high school. That I'm married after 30 years and my children graduated from high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, from where I come from, which is institutional generational poverty.
Yeah.
And it is impossible to escape, because exactly what you said, the parents, the friends, the people around you, your environment. Now today, social media, everyone's telling you can't, nothing's your fault, and nothing is further from the truth. But when you are inundated with it every single day, all these years later, I'm 56. I haven't lived that life in 40 years. When you are inundated, 35 years, when you are inundated with it every day,
yeah,
it's so hard to escape. I ended up, ultimately, I got rid of everybody. I had an epiphany at 28 years old. I was running a company, and people came to me to start a new company. And I was looking at a pro forma. I didn't know what it was. I knew how to operations, and I was hot stuff with all this, but I didn't know how to do these other things. And I had this epiphany. My son was just born. Watershed moment for me. If you don't have children, go have children.
Yeah.
Watershed moment for me. My son was born, my first son. And now I have this in front of me. And instead of going, oh, I'm going to fold it up and ignore it because I don't know what it's about, so I'm not going to go there, I leaned into it. I had a voice in my head said, two epiphanies in my life. This was the second one. Shut up and listen. If you don't shut up and listen, you're going to be doing the same thing now, making $50,000 a year when you're 50 years old, that you're doing right now at 28 years old. I mean, it hit me like a tub, like just a ton of bricks. And I ended up getting rid of all of the people I grew up with because it makes you evaluate where you come from. And the reality was I was watching sports, talking about sports, playing sports, going to the bar and playing and watching and talking about sports,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That was essentially my life away from work. And I went and found people that were smarter than me, and I just shut up and listened. And I got rid of all of the people I grew up with for the most part because it's so hard to escape. And they don't do it on purpose, but they don't want to see you do better than they do.
Yeah, that's so counterintuitive because there's this value in community. But if you don't have the right community that fosters the goals that you're working towards, that becomes tough. And it's not that the people are bad, but the there's an inconsistency between what you're going after, what someone else is going after.
Right. You know, there's a lot of defensiveness in poverty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It just forces you to be defensive. Yeah.
You know, something else you said caught my attention. I remember listening, I think it was one of the local, you know, there's these, the Utah wealthy families, right, who've made it big. They've done stuff. There's a gentleman, John Huntsman. He's funded schools here and there. And he said one time, I think he was talking one time, had a little poke at one of the local senators. He's like, oh, which one of us was poorer growing up? But he made a point that stuck with me, and I don't remember the quote or anything, but he basically said, yeah, he chose to go his direction and be in politics to try to make a difference. I chose to be in business where I can make a real difference, or something like that. You know, just because you're creating jobs, you might be creating generational wealth too, but you have the ability to distribute that and use that in lots and lots of different ways. And that stuck with me from, I don't know, 20 years ago when I listened to him speak at a business class about his upbringing and his philosophies, and just the ability to be in business creates opportunities if you want to have real impact on the communities that need it the most. So,
yeah. I agree with that 1,000%. I'll add to that that many of those guys, many business owners, I know I'm in this group, are happy to help and to talk about their businesses and to explain what business is about and give stories and give perspective. But there is a reluctance for people to engage with people. Now that's the Huntsman's, or that's, you know, but there's a lot of just local entrepreneurs. You walk into their business and want to have some sense of what their world is like. They are happy to talk about it, but again, social media in these days, kind of, you know, I saw a Lamborghini, so I stopped and take a picture. And, you know, if you're working more than 5 minutes a week and not making $1 million a month, you're an idiot, right? That's kind of the entrepreneur perspective. And so when someone comes into the local donut shop and talks to the owner, they're going to get a very different perspective than they do from the guy on South Beach, you know, talking about his entrepreneur investments. You know, it's just not the real world. And the real world can be very difficult. But those guys, all business owners love to talk about their business and what they can do to help people that are looking to become entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Yeah. People that really want to be in that community. I think there's a lot of ends. You just have to approach those people who are there, and they probably are lonely people. I don't want to play that up too much, but they're probably happy to engage in a deliberate conversation about the thing they're building and the struggles they've been through. I mean, that's what this podcast is about, right? I've seen so many CEOs going through this. I'm like, we need a show that just focuses on what are those struggles and what are those breakout moments that people are achieving. because it's everyone relates, right?
I agree 100%. And I have talked to, I don't know how many entrepreneurs, I can't keep track. I'm going to say 100, but it's way more than that. I've talked to, and I've been part of a group, a peer-to-peer group now for 20 plus years. And the thing is that regardless of the size of the entrepreneur, we all think that the mistakes we're making or the struggles that we're having or the issues that are going on, it's just us.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, many of us are men. And so you're like, well, I'm not going to talk about it because I can't look stupid and I'm not going to be the only idiot. But the reality is the business right next to yours is having the same exact problems. I have counseled so many companies with the same problem after the same problem after the same problem. The first thing I tell them is, you know what? The guy I talked to yesterday has the same exact problem that you have.
Yeah.
The guy I'm going to talk tomorrow has the same problem that you're having. And so there's this idea that there's some newer, better, faster, more efficient way to do it. And reality is just, I mean, that might work for the very few at the very top, but reality is very different for those of us that are on the ground banging out a living every day.
Yeah, no, you nailed it on the head for sure. Well, let's go through a couple of mileposts in your career, maybe hit some highlights. And then I want to hear more about building community and, you know, maybe we'll focus in on some type of breakout moment that you've been through or that you've seen somebody else go through it. And I think that to me is going to be an awesome show just to get through those things here. And of course, anything else you want to add, you know, time is yours. So
the first thing I like, I think to understand my story is my background. And I'll give two very specific instances. When I was 14, I went blind and my sister died at 13. When I was 13, she was turning 21. She died. 6 months later, I went blind in my right eye.
Really?
A virus ate my retina. I had surgery to keep my eye. I still have my eye. They thought maybe someday down the road, this is very rudimentary, someday down the road, you know, we might have enough science to put it back. So I'm blind in my right eye. I almost lost my left eye, but I was able to keep it. I wear contacts and have corrective lenses and can make that go. So that year for me at 14 years old was a tough year.
Wow.
And then I was getting some money out of an ATM. And in those days, and when you come from poverty and you have something, a card with your name on it, I remember very well, U.S. Bank. And this is, ATMs weren't even a big thing. Today, nobody would even understand this. You got to be my age to understand it. But having that, and I go and I took 80 bucks. You had to leave $5 in the bank. I took 80 bucks out. Well, I know better. I'm a street kid. I come from, you know, I got that background that tells me to be careful, and I wasn't. I got jumped at the bus stop. They took my wallet. They took my money. And they broke two ribs, broke my nose, and left me underneath the bus stop, underneath the bench, left me for dead.
Wow.
I wake up a couple hours later. I get out from under it. I take, long story short, I take a bus. I'm bleeding down my front. Both eyes are black. I mean, I look like I just got rolled, which is exactly what happened. I have to transfer right to another bus. Now, again, I've been taking buses since I was 5 years old, so I know how to move around the city. Now I get off and I have a 2-mile walk, Portland to Oregon, going over the interstate, Interstate 84. If I go back, I have business back there, so I spend 1 week a month back in Portland. I live in Tennessee. And I don't know, every 2 or 3 months, I go to this square. It's still the same oversized sidewalk square, right?
Really?
Before you go over the freeway. I'm doing this 2-mile walk, beaten to hell. And there was a duplex to my right. And out of the duplex, someone screams, "It's all your fault." And I turn. Now, again, I'm beaten up, right? And I'm this close to death. And I'm just dragging myself home. But there's no one there. And so, Jeff, I've told this story 1,000 times. God is my witness on my children's eyes. I had a voice outside of my head,
yeah,
behind me to the right. I thought it was somebody yelling at me through a duplex that said, "Everything is your fault." So,
really?
Of course, after I kind of think back to myself, I start arguing with this voice. And I said, I just got rolled. My only 80 bucks I have, I got nothing, right? Just another in the long laundry list of things that have gone on in my very short 14 years. It's not my fault. And the voice said, "Everything's your fault. If you don't take responsibility for everything that goes on going forward, you're going to be just like everyone around you."
Yeah,
that
was
it. Now, I don't know if it was Jimmy Cricket. I don't know if it was God. I don't know. In my conscience, I can't tell you I can tell you it was outside of my head, so much so I thought someone was yelling at me out the window of this duplex. I go back there all of these years later, 40 years later, because it had so much impact on my life. It wasn't a hockey stick, but it taught me a very important lesson, particularly where you come from, where I come from, which is everything is your fault. And so I started this. It didn't take right away, but by the time I was 28 and I had my son, it was time to go start my own business for the first time. "Everything is your fault" really started to take hold, and it became my mantra. And so as we go through my story and what I'm all about, it all starts with that, again, whatever it was. My nose was broken. I have a little nubbin on my nose now. I went home for 3 days because there's no one there waiting for me, right? Yeah. I go home and I held my nose shut for 3 days until it stopped opening up. Then I knew I was okay. That was two broken ribs that still give me trouble to this day. But that everything is your fault. I just moved that right into business and work and everything else I did. Like I said, first job at 11, I've never not had a job. I paid taxes every year since I was 11 years old. And I just did it like everything was my fault. And when everything is your fault, it makes very difficult things easier. It doesn't make them easy, but it makes it easier. So I've made mistakes. I've had people on my behalf make mistakes that cost me seven figures. And it's my fault. I was not pissed off at them at all. I wish it didn't happen. I've made seven figures on my own. Why would I, a seven figure mistake on my own? Why would I, you know, how am I any better than them? The point being, and that's a fantastical point, you know, it's the small ones every day that really benefit you when everything is your fault. So I look at it and go, why did I put somebody in place, or how did I put them in place, or what things did I not have in place to stop that from happening? Why didn't I know I gave somebody the power to cost me so much money? And you can do that at that large scale or at that small scale. But really, as I tell my story, it starts on that epiphany after getting beaten and robbed that everything is my fault. And that has just become absolutely my mantra over all of these years as I not only work in my own businesses and I have three operating companies as we speak, but also with anybody else that I'm helping either business-wise or also in life. I've been married for 30 years. I got three great kids. My life couldn't be any better if I tried. Coming where I come from, everything is your fault, is my fault, has just proven to be the best advice I ever gave myself.
That's amazing. You turned it. I mean, because I think a lot of people would be like, no, it's not. It's not my fault. All these things. But you've turned this into an empowering position. This isn't debilitating for you, it sounds like. This is empowering you to do the things that you do.
It wasn't a hockey stick, right? It took me years to kind of comprehend what I was doing. But what I always say is I am who I am because of where I come from and in spite of where I come from. So often we want to say, if it wasn't for, I would have done. Right? If it wasn't for this thing, I would have done that thing. And I was surrounded by that. When you grow up in that environment, from my earliest memories, I'm surrounded by everything is somebody else's fault. And so I think it was a combination of again, the state I was in and kind of the influences I had. I had older brothers and sisters who kind of, you know, none of us went the right direction. And I didn't take off. I mean, I spent time in jail and I did all of those things and I got into trouble. But I kept my head above water with always that thing in my head that said, okay, it's my fault, but I got to kind of come to some sort of idea with that. Coupled with work equals food. Mm-hmm. 11 years old, club sandwich. I would have done it for free. And so I always went to work. I've never missed a day of work. I'm 56 years old. I've taken days off, but I've never missed a day of work. I've been sick, but food equals work, or work equals food. Yeah. And when work equals food, combined with everything is your fault, it gives yourself a chance. There's no guarantee, but it greatly increased my chances of climbing out of where I was, which is I have no education. I read an article at 20 years old that said I needed to buy a mortgage. I didn't know what a mortgage was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what an interest rate was. Again, I was living with hookers and heroin addicts at 17 years old in a $25 a week flop house.
Yeah.
I have a 16-year-old education, right? And so I didn't know what a mortgage was, and I didn't know what equity was. But I read this article. So I bought an $87,000 house at 12.5% interest. I used that house three times in the next decade to finance, to cash flow my business, to help it grow as I was growing as fast as I did when I finally went out and started my own at 28.
Just from reading that about, you should have a mortgage.
Correct. I read a story that said you should buy. I was enthralled with business. And so I always had like a Fortune 5 or a Fortune magazine or a Forbes magazine. Mm-hmm. I was a voracious reader, voracious. That one of my superpowers was the amount that I read. So I had a general interest in things that I didn't understand. Now, I wouldn't talk to you about it because no, I might be wrong. I may not know what I'm talking about. I got a strut, you know, all of those things when you're younger. But I could read it and nobody would know that I didn't understand. I could go back a page and reread it again so I understood it. So I had this kind of natural interest and I only read things that were true. I never read fiction books or any of those things. I just stuck to what I liked. And that kind of lent itself to business for the most part. I was just kind of enthralled with how things worked, which is a kid from the streets is not something you would typically do. But I would be quick to grab the Wall Street Journal. I had a job as a messenger. And if there was a Wall Street Journal in an office, you know, in a lawyer's office, I'd snack that thing and give me something to read.
Yeah, they weren't reading anyways. That, I mean, you've right. got, you might have, you know, one of the most powerful combinations that not everybody has or realize they have. But if I were just from hearing your story, from where you came from, how you are, like you've got the grit and street smarts, if I can call it that. You've got the attitude of learning. And you've got what my good friend tells me I have a problem with sometimes, and that's hyper accountability. You know, when you got a really accountable person who sees that they can manage their own life, and then they love to learn stuff. When you learn that stuff, you've got to put it into action to make yourself accountable. And you're great at action because that's what grit is. Grit is just the ability to get past out of your own head and, you know, take that action. You had to, because that's how you ate. Right. That's how you survived. That's a super powerful combination. Like, is that something that you thought of consciously? You're like, hey, like I've got these superpowers or these abilities, or is it something that just kind of stayed with you and it has evolved and you've kind of drawn that out over time?
The hyper accountability starts at that epiphany.
Yeah.
That beaten down epiphany at 14 years old that took hold at 28 years old when I had a son at home that was a few months old. I'd started looking at the world when my son was born 180 degrees differently than I had prior to him. I mean, literally the second he came out, my world changed. And I started to view my responsibilities and my capabilities and the things that I wanted to go do in a way. I mean, I was this tough, rough, been in 100 fights, 6'4", 240-pound monster, right? That just wanted to make money and work. And that's all I cared about. And I was driven like nothing else. And then my son was born. And I realized I had powers that I couldn't comprehend. I wanted for somebody else rather than myself. So that insular, selfish world, which is all right. I only had to take care of myself before that. There's nothing wrong with that, right? But you're only looking out for yourself. But when I started to live for someone else and I had a purpose that was my son, now all of these, we'll call them superpowers. I do all of the time, perspective, right? And I said, always taking responsibility. These superpowers really came into view. And I was like, I'm ready to risk it. I'm ready to risk. I am not risk averse at all, because you come from
where
I come
from. You've seen it.
Man, I know how to climb back out. And I've done it. I've made fortunes and I've lost fortunes. And I've rebounded from losing fortunes because I know how to survive and I know how to come back. And I know what the bottom is. And even when I have lost them, I'm nowhere near the bottom relative to where I come from. And so really, my son being born, I had a half-built house at home, and I got this prospectus in front of us that could change in front of me that could change my fortunes going forward. And that was really that second epiphany that said, shut up and listen and pay attention. Combine that with, now I know why what happened at 14 years old. Now it makes sense. 14 years later, I get what that voice was trying to tell me all that time ago. And it kind of just really coagulated. So much so as I grew that business, I was the front of the business. I was selling it. They were financing it. I did $3 million the first year. I told them I'd do $3 million. I did $3 million the first year. They didn't have the money for it.
What was the business? What was the nature of the business?
Transportation.
Okay.
So we're doing messenger courier work around the state of Oregon, Portland and around the state of Oregon. $3 million. We had, I don't know, about 90 employees. Business is doing making money, but there's not enough cash flow for that kind of growth, particularly from a standstill. Another caveat. I had no idea what cash flow was. So I'm 1 year into it. I have no idea. I've never heard the term before. I didn't know what it was. And so they come in to fire me because there's not enough cash flow, whatever that meant. But now I've got all those street smarts. I have all that background. I have the stories that I've told you here and other stories that you know, I've been stabbed, like I said, and beaten multiple other times. All of that kind of came together at 29 years old when they fired me. That's really when everything started to kind of fire on all cylinders. And I said, I know how this game's played.
So wait, you're running this business at $3 million a year. There's cash flow issues. All of our growth stage CEOs know what that means, because it's like, they just go to investors oftentimes and like, hey, can you plug this cash flow issue? Because I'm still trying to grow. But you just had your kid at 28, I think you said, right? And so the next year, you're like, oh, I've got all these powers and I know where I want to go. And then the next year it's like, hey, by the way, no job.
That's right. I quit. I had a half-built house we were remodeling when my son was born. I quit my job to start a new business, and I started refereeing basketball games 4 or 5 nights a week to pay the bills while I was working on this business that I'm supposed to get a salary out of, but I never did. Invaluable. Best year I ever spent getting fired and going through all that and moving customers and doing all of those things. just the absolute, the horror that that would be for anyone else. I'm telling you what, there's no college in the world will teach anyone what I learned in that 1 year.
Yeah.
Because then I took all that. And now my son, now my wife's pregnant again. So I have a daughter that's 2 years younger than my son, but I have my son at home and it's time to go out and start my own. And so I went to all of my six customers, four banks, two title companies that I had just moved the year before. And I went to them and said, I got fired. This was 17 days later.
Same line of business though?
Same line of business. Okay. I'm going to go start my own. I'm going to go compete against, of course they sued me and I didn't know what the lawsuit was either. Right? I mean, I had some sense of it, but I'd never been involved in one. Of course they sued me, but I didn't care. And I went six for six, telling them I need you to move them, but not just move with me like you did 6 months or you did a year ago. I need you to prepay me.
Yeah, yeah. Cash flow.
And I got all six. I figured out what cash flow was real quick. I figured out why I got fired. This thing I didn't understand. Oh, yeah. I get it. And they prepaid me. And they prepaid me for a decade before I finally went to them and said, I don't know why the hell you guys still prepay me. We can do away with this. Wow. But my reputation was such. The job that I did was such, their attention to detail, they knew that not only did they move the first time, but they moved the second time. And I didn't know, Jeff, that you didn't get prepaid. I was just like, I need cash flow. I got nobody to go to for cash. I'm going to go to the people I know who have money because they've been paying me for the last year and you know all of the years previous to that. I'm going to go to them. And so the answer to the question never asked is always no. I didn't know this at the time. I was just in my naivete. And again, I'm a kid from the streets. I'm just going to go ask questions, have lunches. And I went six for six and I financed the business. It was about 350 grand a month out of six customers that they prepaid me. And that's how I went and started the next business. Of course, the one I left quickly went off into oblivion. Business is still in operation today. And it's done, I don't know, $250 million, give or take, over the last 25 years.
That's amazing. Sometimes ignorance is a blessing, right? We hear that a lot. People are like you get entrenched and you know, maybe that's a little bit like, you get all these people like my wife and I who grew up, we didn't have the same issues. We didn't grow up with the same exposure perhaps. And like, it was our ignorance that other people had bigger issues than us.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, I think a lot of people approach situations. If you don't know what you don't know, you just, why not? Why not try that? Try the new thing, do the thing that works. I think that's where a lot of innovation comes from, right? It's just these people, you are just saying, well, what's a better way to do it? Why wouldn't we do it this way? You just ask for it and then you kind of get what you ask for a lot of times, right or wrong.
I didn't know that businesses didn't do $3 million a year, their first year in business. I
read a stat just this week that was like, 1% of U.S. businesses do more than $1 million a year. And that's today's dollars.
Yeah.
Like that's.
Yeah. I think the average is $400,000 to $600,000, if I'm not mistaken, for, you know, the 30 million odd businesses that are small businesses in America. I think it's $400,000 to $600,000. And so I didn't know that doing $14 million in your fourth year was a big deal, except people kept coming at me and treating me a certain way and asking me questions that I didn't even know the answers to that I theoretically should have known. I mean, the things that I didn't know, had I known better, I don't know if it would have precluded me from doing it, but I just didn't have any sense one way or the other. And ignorance, I will say that ignorance is bliss when coupled with just an unimaginable will to succeed and a will to do well and a will to push and a stubbornness and a willing to put in the effort and the work and a willingness to be wrong. When you combine those things with ignorance, you can go a long way. The flip side to that, though, and this is the other thing, is when I started making money is when I started costing myself the most money. Because when you start making money and the money starts to pour in, you're not paying attention. All of a sudden, the cars get nicer and your life changes a little bit.
Those
perspectives start to soften around the edges. You know, those hardens start to soften around the edges. And I lost my way for a while and it cost me inordinate amounts of money because I was making a lot of money, but I could have been making a whole lot more money. But you kind of get soft and you fall back on your laurels. At least I did after what I had been through. And so that is a lesson for everybody else also is, always remaining sharp. But here's the superpower through all of that is perspective. I never forget where I come from. I never forget how hard it is. I never forget what life can be like. And so when I'm faced with something tough, or I mean, I've had $200,000 payrolls due on Monday and it's Friday and I have no money.
Yep.
To pay.
Yeah. That's
more times than I would like to admit.
For an accountable, for a hyper accountable person, being responsible for everybody else's payroll and not having the money, that's tough.
It's the worst. It's the worst, but it is reality. And so when you're there, the way that you, Jared, how in the world do you deal with that? And I said, I'll tell you exactly how I deal with it. I stole food to eat as a child, right? So this problem is either overcomable and I'm going to throw everything at it that I can, or it's not. And if it's not, then I will deal with whatever that throws at me. And I will deal with that, because when I was 19 years old, I got mugged behind a bowling alley and they put a 10-inch screwdriver trying to put it into my liver, and it got stuck in the muscle in my back.
What?
Took care of that problem and I got out of it. And I went home to this crappy little apartment I had that I was paying 700 square feet. And I laid in the bathtub on a Friday night in warm water. And it took me 6 hours reaching behind me with my left hand to slowly pull this 10-inch screwdriver out of my back.
This is a real story? Jerry, this sounds
1,000% real story. Now, I was walking out of the, it was a couple of Laotians. I lived in Portland, Oregon, and they'd come over the what we call the boat people, right? They were leaving the Khmer Rouge and the killing fields through the 70s and the 80s, and they moved into the kind of the poor neighborhood that I lived in. So they were pool players, and I was a pool player, and I'm smarter than I was. But again, you let your guard down a little bit. I'm 19 years old. I take them from some money. I had gotten in a fight with them a few months earlier, so I just wasn't smart enough not to go back. And they caught me. It comes out of a, it was called Sandy Lanes. It burned down about 10 years ago. And I'm walking out the back, and we all parked in the fish. They had a fish restaurant. We all parked in the fish restaurant, came in this little back. But the problem was, it was like an alleyway to get into the back of this bowling alley. I take their money. A couple of them ran out, or one of them ran out front. One of them followed me. I didn't pay attention to the one following me. So I got the guy in front of me. And in those days, you would carry weapons. Would be like a sharpened 10-inch, very thin screwdriver, or even a regular screwdriver that you would sharpen down. So if you got pulled over or the cops got a hold of you, you just have a screwdriver, right? Okay. You don't have a weapon. You just have a screwdriver. And so they're going to get their money back plus whatever I had. And they caught me in this little back alley as I'm going down to my car, and I get the guy in front of me. And here's divine intervention. This is the way that I explain this. I've always said I'm blind in my right eye. I went blind at 14 years old. The guy coming from behind me, I sensed him as I'm engaging with the guy in front of me. And instead of turning to my right, I'm right-handed. Instead of turning that way, I turned left because I can't see out of my right eye. And I turned left. Well, as I turned, he was going to put the 10-inch screwdriver into my liver, right? He's coming in on my right side and he's going to put it. But I turned this way. And so it came into my back and got stuck in the muscle. The tip of it just popped through kind of front here left, front here right. And he couldn't pull it out because the muscle grabbed it.
Yeah.
And he couldn't pull it out.
That's
so I got out of that. They were smaller than me, thank God. And I didn't know I'd been stabbed. I left them there and I get in the car and I have to drive this really crappy car and I have a clutch and I have to work the clutch and something's not right.
Yeah.
And it was facing that direction. So I couldn't reach it. And by the time I got home, now I'm in pain because I'm calming down, right? And now I know something's not right. And I get in and sure enough, it's a 10-inch screwdriver that was hanging at an angle out of my back. And so I went over 6 hours as I wasn't bleeding profusely. Again, I'm a street kid. I know what blood looks like.
Sure.
So I knew that I wasn't in trouble. You're not going to go to the cops. And I've seen multiple murders in my lifetime right in front of me. I know the rules.
You don't go to the hospital. Is it a rule you don't go to the hospital?
No, the poor people don't go to the hospital. Right. And when I was a kid, you didn't go to the hospital.
Okay.
My broken nose, I went home and held it shut.
I'm revealing my ignorance here again.
I've never been to the dentist until I was 30.
Okay.
I've never been to a dentist. Right? I mean, there's not things that you, when you live in poverty, it's just not things that you do. You don't think about it. I mean, when you're worried every day about what you're going to eat the next day, go to a doctor or a dentist or any of those
things. That's not even on your agenda. Okay.
No.
Okay.
Legit, I'm going to say I probably didn't even know what a dentist was till I was 20 years old. I'm not going to lie. I probably had no sense of what that was. But so long story short, I'm laying in the bathtub and it took me about 6 hours and I'm reaching behind with this hand and I could only move it a little bit at a time until I finally got it out. And again, I'm not bleeding profusely, straight into the muscle. I tape it up really tight. I put the only towel I have around it. I go to bed. Monday morning, I was working at a place called McAdam Carpet Warehouse, taking carpet off of with a forklift, pulling it out and cutting it. And I was at work Monday morning. So when you live through that and you have those kind of stories, My perspective is $200,000 payroll. That's a mountain. That sucks. I wish I didn't have to deal with that, but I do. And Monday's going to come. And what can I figure out? Well, these days it's checks and I've got 2 or 3 days afloat at least. Oh, that gives me till Wednesday. All right. Who do I know that I can get 50 G's from on Wednesday? Because I got money coming. I just don't have it yet. Right. So you get contacts and you know people. And I got a guy who had a payroll due on Friday that loaned me 50 grand for 4 days that week. Wow. To make, you know, to kind of get me over the hump. The point being, I didn't freak out. I didn't go crazy because I have this crazy perspective on life. I never forget what's important. And it helps you deal with the problems even when they go wrong. When I've lost the most money, I'm as calm when I lose and have made huge mistakes and I fought with the government. I've had all kinds of issues as when I make huge upside and I have tremendous success. I kind of treat it all the same way.
Yeah, man, I want to co-opt a little bit of this, and I want to be like, next time I have struggles, I'm going to be like, well, it's not a shank in the liver. I'll be fine.
Yeah, it could be worse. It could be a shank in the liver. That's exactly right. Yeah.
That's amazing, Jerry. I mean, most people don't go through that, right? At least as far as I know, my world, my community, this is outside my experience. But maybe that's why, you know, you've done a lot. You've earned a lot. You've lost a lot. You've built companies. You're running companies. Like, that translates into a very valuable skill set, doesn't it? I mean, not just to run your own companies, but we were talking before about being able to build a community and being a part of a community. And like as I think about communities, a lot of the things you get from community, in addition to some camaraderie and maybe a feeling of comfort and safety that you're with people that you know and you trust them. But I think communities where they're really valuable, again, this show is trying to do the same thing, is you join a community and you get perspective. You get to see around corners that, you know, you haven't been around, but somebody else has been around those. You mentioned you were part of that group for 20 years, a mentor group, the peer group. How do your life stories fit into a group like that? I assume you showed up and you're like, oh, you guys haven't been stabbed or shot or.
Oh, that's so good, Jeff. I got a story right up there real quick. I joined the group. I'll tell that story in a second. But when I'm in the group and the group starts to know me, the group is, you get together once a month. Everybody gets a half an hour. You talk about your business. There's 8 to 10 guys. So it's half a day every day. And they act as your board. Absolutely, yeah. Invaluable.
Great mastermind format, right?
It's more of a peer-to-peer than, you know, just one guy kind of preaching to 200 uh-huh. people. It's on the ground dealing with problems that you have every single day.
Yeah.
But I'll come back to that. The story is, I'm there for a couple of years. And finally, these guys, I'm 30 years old and my business was bigger than theirs. But they had a ton more. That didn't mean anything. They knew way more than I did. And as we're talking, I remember maybe it was 3 or 4 years in. And one of the older guys, he was about 60 at the time, still alive in his 80s now. And he says, Jerry, you understand, none of us have ever been in a fight. There's, you know, 7 guys sitting around the table. We all went to college. Everybody went to college. You're the abnormal one.
Did that blow your mind, just like it kind of blows my mind with these stories you're telling me?
I had never... I didn't realize that my story was different, right? I thought, because when you're a kid and you're poor, you don't know you're poor.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're 8 years old, you don't know you're poor. When you're scamming for stealing candy bars to eat, you and your little brother, you don't realize that everyone doesn't do this. You just think that everyone does this because this is the life that you have. I, you know, with all humility, as I got into my 30s, I didn't realize that you could be successful without getting punched in the face or shanked in the, you know, behind a bowling alley. And so as my kids, though, now are young, and I'm talking about my kids and I'm worried about them not, you know, getting punched in the face. And that's when they were all like, whoa, 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 man. We all went to college and we went to Oregon and Oregon State and our parents had businesses, or some of them had bootstrapped it. But, you know, they were like, I've never even been in a fight. None of us have. And you don't need that to be successful. And it really was a turning point for me in the way that I not only looked at life, but also how I was raising my kids. Because I thought that you had to get hit upside your head a dozen times, right? Because that's where mine comes from, right? That's where who I am. But the reality was very different. I'm the anomaly. But that's why I talk about this the way that I do so openly, and I tell my stories the way I do, because I want people to have some understanding that if you don't have the problems that I did growing up, fantastic, go get yours and do what you can. If you did have things like I grew up, it doesn't mean that you don't have the same opportunities that the guy that does, that did have the opportunities or had it easier, whatever it is. Because again, on the poor side, like we talked about at the beginning, you're always trying to, everyone's trying to hold you back. Everyone's trying to hold you down. And so I want people to know, no. You, like most billionaires, right? What, 70 some billionaires are self-made. Like so many people that make it big in America, it doesn't matter where you start. It does not matter at all. That's not been my experience. I've hired 10,000 people. I've never asked where someone went to school or what's on their paperwork, what kind of degree they have. I never have. All of the executives that have ever worked for me, I couldn't tell you where they went to college, because I hire street smarts, people that can think on their feet. I can teach what I want them to know, but mm-hmm. that underlying kind of sense of the world and the way that things work, that's the most valuable part. For years, I used programs that I learned stock in the freezer at McDonald's when I was 16 years old, when they were paying me $2.40 an hour, in my businesses today.
Yeah.
And McDonald's paid me to learn those things rather than me looking at it as a $2.40 hour, or whatever, how much money I made when I was 16 years old, $3 an hour. They paid me for that. And I took that and I applied that at the next job. And I took what I learned at the next job and I applied it to the next job until the jobs were my jobs. And now I applied all of that knowledge that I had to the things that I was doing. When I started my own business, I had more education than, I don't care where you went to college, what business degree you got. When I started my business at 29, after they fired me after year one, I had more knowledge about how business worked than anybody graduating from any business school in the country.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. The classical MBA jokes, you know, those apply. And I've got my MBA. I think it was a valuable experience for me, but it's a totally different experience than running your business, getting fired for cash flow. And you're like, oh, that's what cash flow is. It's not just a number on the pro formas. That's your job, is to make sure cash is coming in at the right time for the right things. You can't learn it more deeply than that.
No. And that's the message, and education is important. And I don't want to sound like I'm poo-pooing education at all, because I'm not. But the reality is, perspective is what's critical.
Yeah.
So if you can combine summers working as an intern every single year that you're going to school, you're going to learn more as an intern than you're going to learn on the books. And so that when you come out, if you have that knowledge about what the real world looks like, you're going to be that much more effective. Would I have lived through what I lived through, went and got an MBA, and then went out in the world, would I have been even more successful? Probably.
Perhaps.
I would have made contacts and things like that I didn't otherwise, probably. But I have no complaints whatsoever. And the knowledge that I gained having zero education is available to everyone, more so today than, and there's no internet. There's no computers. We did everything by paper.
Well, so how does somebody who's running a business, let's take a, you know, I don't know, 20 something, let's call them a 28 year old, because that's where you were, a 28 year old. They've started a business. They've seen some success. Maybe they're doing $3 million a year or $3 million a month or something. A lot of these businesses, there's so much opportunity out there. They haven't had your life experience. What's a tip or two that you'd give them, you know, without having to go through some of those experiences? What would you say, hey, this is, like, watch out for this, or, you know, be aware of these things. Where do you apply this life experience to these scaling CEOs or these younger people who are probably now coming to you and saying, hey, tell me what you did. How do I follow your path? You were following the path of these now 80-year-olds in your mentor group. How do they follow your path?
I would, this answer to this question has changed over the last 15 or 20 years as I look back on it. It's typically framed to me, if I could go back, what would I tell myself, right? Different as you're starting business, same sort of question. And the number one thing for me is, and it's getting worse every day, what I tell new entrepreneurs or even existing ones that just don't know, is the government at every level is your enemy. And so you need to view the government as your enemy at every level, regardless of what you're doing. Had I been more aware that the government wasn't on my side, but was actively working against me in many cases, up to today, I have a 38-lot subdivision I've been working on for 3 years. I can't get the thing off the ground. Oregon law is one thing. County law is another. Oregon law takes precedent over county law. The county law says, I don't care. Sue me. Sue them. We're 3 years behind. It cost me $250,000 carry every year.
My father's in real estate, has been for 45 years. That's a business. Yep.
Yeah, you know. But I can take that and apply that to every single business I have ever had, every deal I have ever had. The government makes it. You just need to understand that they are not your friends and that your job is to make sure that you understand what they are about as well as you can. Don't make any assumptions. Don't listen to people who think they know. Talk to experience. This is where we're going to get to the peer-to-peer group and this one that I've started and why they're so important, because they'll give you perspective that you don't have. Listen to that. So I know that seems out of left field. Maybe that's probably not an answer you've ever gotten, but if I could go back and understand that the government is actively working against me at every level for my success, I would have had an easier time, not making it easy. We're still been doing really hard, but I would have had an easier time navigating that had I been aware of that. So that would be the number one thing. And then the number two thing is exactly what we talked about earlier. I knew how to sell. And I've always said anyone can sell. Selling is the, let me finish, because I think any CEO is going, what is he talking about? Selling is easy. There's nothing to it. Selling profitable is damn near impossible.
Yes, yes.
Right? So we can all sell at cost. Everyone can do that. You want to try to sell profitably, that's where it gets really difficult. And that's where cash flow also comes into play. And so make sure that you're making money and don't take any assumptions. This is basic 101 business. I understand. And it's probably the same answer that every CEO you've talked to, we all give the same answer.
It
is absolutely the lifeblood of a business when it's early or when it's in the late stages. If you are not making money, if you can't figure out where you're making money, if you don't know why you're losing money, if you don't know why the cash flow isn't where it is, if you haven't done your projections, if you don't have a budget, if you're not following along something, it doesn't have to be gnats, to the gnats ass. It can be just broadly have an idea and you're not hitting that idea. You're in trouble. You just don't see it. And conversely, if you're making money, you can always make more money.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So pretend like you're poor.
Yeah. Yeah. And so many people today, a couple of years ago, it was not as much this way, but now we're seeing a lot more people, even investors, saying, hey, unit economics, we need profitability. We need to see that the business actually works as a business. And a lot of that gets hidden, especially in these scaling companies where, you layer on an investor model onto your operating model. And now you can hide those gaps with, they say sales solves or sales hides a multitude of sins, right?
That's right.
I think investment is the band-aid. If you don't have the sales, but you can get the investment, you can also hide a multitude of sins in your business. You can get through those periods, and maybe that's getting you, past that gap to get to profitability, but maybe it's not. That's where it's, as I've worked with businesses that are both funded with investment and others that are maybe more practically funded or bootstrapped, I always get concerned that this investment fundraising amount is going to make it harder for the companies to actually become operationally profitable, and that's a tough balance, because it's just a different model on top of and maybe superseding in some cases your actual business model.
And those first principles, whether it is an investment model or it's a bootstrap model, absolutely have to take precedent. Even if you are, I get selling yourself to help through cash flow. I get that, right? That makes sense. Just keep selling. You can kind of keep the wolves at bay. You're probably not making a lot of money on an EBITDA basis, but you're doing your thing.
Yeah.
But at some point, you can't hiccup that. You can't go backwards.
Right.
The next month after you've gone backwards, you're in trouble. But knowing that and understanding that that's what you're doing and then hitting a benchmark for that, you can grow your way out of that 100%. Of all of the years that I have been in business and the myriads of people that I have talked to and interacted with, very few of them, of the 30-odd million entrepreneurs, I think it's something like 3.5 million have more than 10 employees. The majority of them are solopreneurs. So you got 30-odd million solopreneurs. the advice that I give and the where I come from is that guy that's bootstrapping, because that is the vast majority of the business, the small business world out there. And so the investment money, it has a complexity to it. It has its own upside and its own downside. And the upside, obviously, it can make the downside a little bit easier. But again, you got to hit your benchmarks. But really, this advice goes across the board to either one. But I'm talking mostly to that guy that decides he wants to go start a lawnmower in business. I got a great guy that I've been helping. His business has just been going nuts here in Tennessee, and he works on swimming pools. And it was just himself. And now it's three groups. And when he met me, he was just himself. And they can't do it as well as I can. And now here's how we do it. And this is what we, you know, how we can figure that out. And now he's going to have his first seven-figure year. And it's just incredible, the growth. And so those are, for me, those are the guys that, that I hope my advice comes through to. Not that the guys that get investment, that's how I did it the first time. That's not important, or that's important also. But the majority of the guys out here are guys that are just sitting trying to rip it every single day and thinking that they're making these mistakes and they're the only ones on the planet that are going through this. And the reality is that it just isn't. And these basic principles, if you just apply these basic principles, I'll give you one story. I was $14 million a year. I wasn't making any money. I was losing it. It was going away. And I cut it back to $8 million. I got rid of my two biggest customers, which made up the vast majority of that $6 million. Because they were 90% of my workers' comp claims, and I couldn't afford workers' comp anymore. So that's how I found it, was that they were 90%. Now, I found it because it was shoved down my throat. I didn't find it because I was being proactive looking for it. And I had to take the company back where I could get my hands around it at $8 million and have an idea of what I was doing before I could start growing it again, which is what ultimately we did. I ended up doing that twice. That's how dumb I am, right? Back up, had to take it back where I could get my hands around it again.
I think dumb would have been not making the changes, so...
Yes, that's true. But to, just to give some context to, you know, again, all of the advice I give, all of the stories I have, all of it's just practical, earned, on the ground advice. And if I don't know something, I'll guarantee I know someone who does.
Yeah.
Right? I've ran across someone who, hang on, I don't know that much about this. Let me direct you to Jeff. Jeff knows the inside. No problem. Jeff, let me call him up real quick. He'll help you out. You know, that sort of thing. So that's really where I come from. And that's, again, back to the peer-to-peer group that I just started, which is why that's so important, because that peer-to-peer group that I started when I was, or excuse me, not that I started, that I joined, Fortune 500 CEO walks into my office off of a cold call. He had started this group. He wanted me to come be a part of it. Somebody had done a newspaper article on me and he had seen it. So he came to me and he's telling me, and he says, you got to join the group. And I said, I can't join the group. I don't have time, nor do I have the money. It's like $600 a month at the time. This is 25 years ago. And he said, yeah, you can't afford not to do either. And not a truer word was spoken. So while I'm working 18 hours a day, I'm taking one day a month for 5.5 hours, sitting in a round table with a bunch of other operators. And for 3 years, I didn't say anything because I had nothing to say. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I couldn't believe that this guy had the same problem that I had last week. And this guy over here was telling me about a problem I'm about to have next week.
Yep.
And then they're giving me the answers on how to do it or not how to do it to help me kind of navigate through this very, very complex thing that I thought I was the only one in the world going through it. And so for me, I always tell people, don't follow your passion. Do what you're good at. What can you make money at? Sell to people at a profit. Take that profit and go follow your passion.
That's right.
And so that's in that environment, that's the environment I've never done in any of the things I've ever done in the businesses I've ever owned. Am I passionate about? I work passionately on them so that I can do better for my children and my family and all of those things. But they're not my passion. This latest company, the Kronos Group, K-R-O-N-O-S, Kronos. Kronos was the god of time in Greek mythology. And I was like, something entrepreneurs don't have enough of. So the Kronos Group is that peer-to-peer group almost exactly that I was a part of for 25 years. We still get together one time a year. The guys are in their late 70s and 80s now. And I'm right where they were when I joined. And I was like, I've been talking about this forever, going back to my 87-year-old mother. I'm having dinner with her last Christmas, and she's like, you know what, you either need to shut up or just start that business, because you've talked about starting one of these forever.
So is that going now?
I'm just putting together my first group. It's thekronosgroup.org online. We just got the website built. We're putting the first group together. And the beautiful thing about it is it's two parts. You have the group, which will be 8 to 10 guys. Everybody goes around. You get your half an hour. And then you have a board that kind of holds you accountable. It's not kumbaya. It's for operators. It's for killers. We're in there to make money. And If I don't know what advice to give you, one of them do, and you pick it up from them. And then you get 1 hour a week with, or 1 hour a month with me on top of it. So we get one-on-one action where we're sitting, going through what we learned, what we talked about, what you need to work on. And those one-on-ones were every bit as important as the group, because in that one-on-one, that Fortune 500 CEO that was retired coming, man, this guy just nailed me. I mean, he just hammered me, right? And I needed it. I was like, no, I didn't do that. Why didn't you do that? You know, well, because I like that guy. I know, but we remember in the group, we decided like guys is, you know, you're not going to make money. The decision, man, I know, but you know, those sorts of things. That's a simplified version, but it just keeps your thumb. He just kept the thumb down on me. So it worked out really well. And so I finally have gotten around to time to follow something I'm passionate about, which is helping other entrepreneurs in this kind of, in this on the ground environment, as opposed to kind of a mastermind.
And you said it was Kronos Group. Right.
The chronosgroup.org. Correct.
And who should be thinking about joining that type of group? Like, what's a profile, if there is one, of the type of people that are joining? Of course, assuming that they've all been either punched in the nose or stabbed in the back, once they meet that criteria.
If I did that, that would be a very small customer list. I would think. Yeah, it's, you know, if you are scaling a company and you're up in the high six figures all the way up to however many millions, right? $20, $25 million. At any one time, that's about how many I've done in a year, right? My companies have generated over the years, we're just shy of about $500 million. And so over 25 years, I kind of keep it where I know. And that's going to, you know, zero to $15, $20 million is going to encompass anybody, but really it's going to be that zero to 10 guy. That is either an entrepreneur and running their business, brand new, been at it for 20 years, whatever it is, and or they are operating the business on behalf of other people. Two of the guys that were in my group for all of those years ran businesses for families. And so they were the CEO of the family, or the number two guy in terms of one of the other guys was a number two guy in a family business, and they sent him there. But they had operational authority. They could write checks. You know, they dealt with the finances, you know, they were the CEOs or they were the leaders of their companies. And so really, if you're an $800,000 a year operator, right, whatever money that you would spend on me or anyone like me, that sounds self-serving, which it is. I'm here to, you know, I want to fill up my groups and the chronosgroup.org, sure. Go check it out.
Yep.
But the stories I just told you, all of that to find the success that I have and to navigate the issues and the money that I've lost and all of the problems that I've had to deal with, having a group to go to and say, here's my problem this month. This is my biggest problem. Help me out. And then having eight or nine guys sitting around the table that are invested in you doing well and being honest with you and providing you their experience. I mean, your hundreds of years of experience, you know, be sitting around that table. You can't find that on the internet. You can't find an answer like that, you know, on ChatGPT. You need operators that have been there and done that. That will help you navigate that. And then to your point, and this is not a small point, the feeling of camaraderie when you live on an island by yourself is invaluable, because you're in a group with a bunch of other guys that are on the same island.
Yeah.
You just don't know, right? They're living on their own island. And all of a sudden you go, wait, there's other people just like me that have the same problems. I'm not an idiot. I'm not a loser, right? I'm not doing this wrong. I didn't go to college, so I don't have information. Everyone has to deal with this the same way. For me, that was really empowering all those years ago at 31, 32 years old. Super empowering.
Yeah, no, it sounds fantastic. I'm so glad you mentioned it, because I've talked, you know, online and offline with some other CEOs, and several have mentioned how powerful groups like this can be for them. You know, they take so much perspective away from it. Of course, I'm certain these are really smart guys. I'm certain they're also adding their perspective, bringing value to the other members of the group. But from their perspective, they receive so much out of these groups that, it's hard to say what the value really is. I read something on LinkedIn today. It was about attorneys, not necessarily business owners, but it's like, you know, someone, the hypothetical, tell me what you saved the company this year, from the work that you've done or something like that. And, you know, it's really hard for attorneys to calculate ROI based on legal activities. Sure. And they're like, well, I don't know how to say it in numbers, but, I can tell you, we saved the company like three different times this year. So can't put numbers to it, but the company still is here because of us.
And the value in the group setting, the way, and it's all digital, right? So you just, you know, do it from your office or your home, wherever you are, but you mm-hmm. get together with the guys, and the value there is, unlike a mastermind group, it's nothing the matter of the mastermind group, but I personally, this is just me personally, have never gotten anything out of one of these online seminars or any of these mastermind groups. And so that's why I didn't go the mastermind way, which is an easier business model than the one that I'm putting together. But I'm not going that model because I want to help business owners on the ground with their problems. And that's the thing about the group is you may not learn anything new, but you might provide some benefit to the group, right, that benefits somebody else. And then your turn will come around 3 months later and you'll go, oh, and it may not even be your turn, but you're listening to two other guys talk. And all of a sudden you go, I have that same problem. You may not even know, this happened dozens of times. You don't, business owners may not know they have the problem.
Right, right.
And then you hear about the problem from somebody else and you go, wait, I do that same thing.
You're like, wait a second, repeat that. I wasn't paying attention as much as I should have, but I heard you just say this. And I think that's, you just described what I've been doing. Say that again.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, hold up everybody. And that is where the meeting really starts to flourish because you go, I do that same thing and you're spending how much? I spend X dollars more. It's like, yeah, I don't know why. Here, let me hook you up with Mike, and Michael hook you up, and you're doing it. You do it this way, and we set it up this way, and then you get this, and then you save $10,000 a month. And he's like, well, I only make $10,000 a month. Well, now you've made double that. I cannot tell you the number of times that's insurance, finance, it doesn't matter what it is, across the board. Somebody will have some new product that they're rolling out, and they're like, yeah, I talked, and this is fantastic. And so now I do this, and I no longer, that's how I learned about how to buy insurance was through this group rather than going through the big groups, but combining it and buying it where I pay, you know, up to a certain number. I don't know how many tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars that saved me over 25 years. I don't know how much, just learning how to do that, learn it from the group. And so that's really where the value of those come in. And then again, that one-on-one, for the price of the group on that monthly basis and all of that information, you get a one-on-one with me. I would have paid the Fortune CEO that came in easily twice what I paid a month for the group to have him come in and hold me accountable. Easy to say that after he's died.
Sure, sure.
The guy was tough, but I needed it and it was fantastic. And so it's really kind of brings economies to scale. It's not cheap, right? So this isn't something you're going to get for $500 a month, but the value that it's going to bring, in my estimation, for me was massive. So that's where I will just say the kronosgroup.org is the group I'm putting together. I'd love y'all to go there and check it out, but go find a mentor, somebody on the ground. Back to the mastermind again. I didn't do that simply because when I'm listening, I personally just have never, I know, but how do I deal with, it's Friday and I have $200,000 in payroll due on Monday. How do I deal with that? That's my problem. And that's kind of disconnect for me. I was like, no, I'm going to deal with outfits and people who can help me in my day to day, as opposed to making me feel better about myself and go home all jacked up and ready to, you know, go to war.
Ready to go without the perspective that you actually need.
Right. Without some answers, right? Yeah. Or so some ideas. Yeah. So again, I'm not being negative. That's just for me. Some people like to go to those things and they get a lot out of them. I just never have. I spend my time on things that I can learn directly from that will impact my business. And then if it doesn't impact my business, I'm probably not going to pay any attention to it.
Yeah. No, totally understand. Well, you've been more than gracious today, sharing experiences, stories, thoughts, frameworks, you know, all of that. And we'll make sure to put that link to the kronosgroup.org in our show notes. We'll spread this across our network, LinkedIn. If somebody wanted to reach out to you, is that the best place to go? Are you on LinkedIn? Are there any other places to connect with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, jerry@jerrybrazy.com, the media at thekronosgroup.org. There's a myriad. jerry@jerrybrazy.com is the website. It'll take you there. Thekronosgroup.org will let you get in contact with me. LinkedIn at the Kronos Group, Instagram. You know, we do regular videos where I'm kind of talking about the things that we talk about. I kind of have always done that. I've had a podcast for years, kind of talking business and just life and these sorts of things. So I'm out there. Anybody can find me.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be here today. It's been a pleasure for us. And to all our listeners for the Breakout CEO podcast, it's been fun having you around again. Hope you took away a bunch of insights from this and a few things to apply in your own businesses. So we'll say goodbye to Jerry. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next week. Yeah.